Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hey, Seamus, how's it going, my friend?
Sean, good to be with you.
Yeah, where are you at in the world?
I'm in sunny Tallahassee, Florida.
Oh, beautiful. I was the best man at a wedding once, Cocoa Beach, Florida. Sun was rising. It was in the morning. Beautiful. Florida is amazing. All right, so it looks like we've got quite a lot of overlap over the years. I've gone after the Bush and Clinton crime families in several of my books. And now we've got this term, controligarchs. How do you define a controligarch? What does it mean?
Yeah, so a controligarch is a combination of the words control and oligarch, obviously. And it's the billionaires and bureaucrats plotting and scheming to dominate every aspect of our lives. So men like Bill Gates or Klaus Schwab at the World Economic Forum, Jeff Bezos, Mark Zuckerberg, George Soros, all of the world's favorite villains.
And for viewers, links for the book and all of Seamus's links are in the description box below this video, so please support his work. You listed some pretty big names there. Who would you classify as the most nefarious?
It's so tough. Well, Bill Gates features prominently front and center on the cover. So he's really got his hand in so many pies. He's up to so many different things, whether it's the takeover of the farmland in America or the digital ID scheme that he's rolling out with the United Nations worldwide. He's working on big things in artificial intelligence. So I sort of put him at the center of it all. But of course, George Soros has been at this a long time. He's been trying to erase the borders of countries and import migrants from all over the world, basically just do away with the concept of a nation state. And he's also in America behind a lot of the making crime legal. So opening up our prisons, putting in these prosecutors who are very soft on crime. That's a big problem, obviously. And I think Klaus Schwab, I'll give you a triumvirate of the worst three. Klaus Schwab, he's really just the front man, the spokesperson, but what he represents, the interests he represents, are more powerful than basically any country, including the United States or China or the UK. The World Economic Forum sits on top of trillions upon trillions. I mean, more than 25 trillion just in its top members. So Klaus Schwab is pretty dastardly as well.
So I was working in Arizona in the stock market in the 1990s and watching Microsoft shares just rise and rise. And this legend came with it of this revenge of the nerds superhero, Bill Gates. How did it go? How did it transform this legend from this man who is now trying to control the world in so many ways, through land, through food, through fake meat? What happened?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. So I've read all the biographies and all of the memoirs, by his father, watched all the documentaries on Bill Gates, and really got into the weeds with accounts from Microsoft employees. You may remember during the 1990s, Microsoft was under investigation. There was actually a lawsuit filed against Microsoft for anti-competitive business practices. It was the famous antitrust suit. And before that, Bill Gates was not very charitable at all. His mother would beg him to give away some of his money to charity. And he wouldn't. He was a very cutthroat business guy. Didn't think he needed to be a philanthropist at all. I mean, this is even as he's the world's richest man in the early 1990s. Even on her deathbed, his mother asked him to give away to charity. And it was really not until the antitrust trial against Microsoft that he goes about rebranding himself as this great philanthropist. I mean, he sets up the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and all of a sudden he's not a cutthroat monopolist. He's a philanthropist. Well, in that antitrust trial in the 90s, the prosecutors uncovered a strategy. You may have heard of it, but many people have not. It was called the Embrace, Extend, Extinguish strategy, whereby Microsoft would seek to cut off the air supply, that's a quote, from competitors. And so the example during the antitrust trial in the 90s was the browser wars, and how Microsoft would embrace the browser standards of the day, and it would then extend its reach. It would put Internet Explorer browser on every single PC. And eventually in the extinguish phase, they would push for changes to, you know, the standards and regulations that would cut off the air supply to its competitor, Netscape. And so that was a tactic that was unveiled in the Microsoft. I mean, they also use the words exterminate interchangeably with extinguish, but that's what he's doing now in a lot of industries, whether it's the health industry or you know, with pharmaceuticals, whether it's the food industry. I mean, how it's working with the food industry is he embraces becoming a farmer, starts buying up all the farmland, starts investing in a lot of these fake meat companies like Beyond Meats and Impossible Foods, starts investing in these new synthetic fertilizer companies. He extends his reach, buys more and more land, invests in more and more companies. And now we are seeing the extinguish phase play out, whereby he pushes for regulation changes. And whether it's, you know, Agenda 2030 net zero cuts on emissions, or whether it's banning cattle or drastically reducing, you know, they'll say we need to reduce methane, which means reduce cows. You need to ban certain types of fertilizer. This has got farmers all around the world up in arms because it's happening everywhere. German farmers actually just yesterday gridlocked Berlin. They drove hundreds of thousands of tractors and blockaded Berlin. So the German farmers are upset. We know the Dutch farmers were very upset, are very upset. France, a week or two ago, the French farmers were spraying cow manure on the government buildings because of these cuts that Bill Gates and others like him are behind.
Wow. And I'd like to dive deeper into that. But before we do so, I'm extremely curious as to whether you've traced the root cause of his psychopathy. Was he bullied by the jocks? What happened?
Yeah, well, I went all the way back. I mean, he was always a nerd, proud nerd, and yeah, I'm sure he was bullied to a degree. But he was sort of a mama's boy, and his mother and his father really created him. And he said that they actually, you know, he was constantly at war with them over who was in control. His mother, they sent him to counseling or therapy because he was such a problem child. And he was in this group called the Lakeside Pro. And so his father had all these tech clients. I mean, his father was this big hotshot lawyer in Seattle. Basically, single-handedly, the Gates family turned Seattle, Washington into like a biotech hub. And his father helped get a lot of other big companies off the ground, companies like Starbucks, Costco, and Amazon even. You know, Amazon is a Seattle-based company that got Gates seed money. But in any case, his father had these clients who were very technologically savvy. You know, it was really having a lot to do with patents and intellectual property. And so even when Bill Gates was just a child, his father was pioneering ways to leverage, you know, the intellectual property of a product to gain a monopoly type, over the various industries that his clients were in. And so Bill Gates, the younger, learned from his father. His father was the general counsel at Microsoft. His father was like the first co-chairman of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And he learned a lot about kind of these cutthroat tactics of using intellectual property, having patents, and then making sure that the competition was banned for one reason or another, and so that he would have a monopoly. The Lakeside, going back a little bit to his high school days, the Lakeside Programmers Club, they kicked Bill Gates out. He was kind of, you know, this might be the bullying you're talking about. This would be Paul Allen and a couple of the other guys in Seattle who eventually went on to form Microsoft. They kicked Bill Gates out. And he there's a great quote that he said. He's like, if you let me back in, you just know I'm going to take full control over everything. So you want to be careful. But they let him back into the club. And eventually, you know, the rest is sort of history with Microsoft. It becomes the largest software company in the world, and has been behind a lot of the tech revolution that we are seeing even today with the OpenAI, you know, ChatGPT arms race that's underway. Microsoft is a huge backer of that, and Bill Gates is going to be big into AI. He is big in AI right now.
Wow, I had no idea about the extent of the nepotism. The legend I was told in the 90s was that he just started this from scratch out of his garage.
No. It's fascinating because it's in the book, and I wanted to get to the bottom of this because there's a lot of big tech guys who have this exact same origin story of like, I was just a nerd tinkering around in the garage. Bill Gates hasn't coded a product, like hasn't coded or like programmed something since the TRS like 86. It's like more or less a graphing calculator. So he's not this like computer whiz that he's built himself up to be. Really, what happened is his mother was on the board of the United Way Foundation, a big charity in the United States, on the board of the United Way Foundation with the CEO of IBM. And so IBM, she somehow cajoled the IBM John Opel CEO to hire her. I believe he was about 21 years old at the time, to license Microsoft as its first operating system. The only problem is Microsoft didn't even have an operating system. And so they had to buy one from another company. It was called the QDOS. I mean, this is really in the weeds stuff, but the quick and dirty operating system, they purchased it from someone else, hired a few programmers from other companies, and essentially just, middlemanned an operating system for IBM. And then it was that partnership with IBM that turned Microsoft into the giant company it is today. So I don't want to say Bill Gates did nothing, but he certainly didn't build it.
Okay, so what's Gates's relationship with the CIA? Have you ever explored that?
Yeah, well, all of the big tech companies have very deep ties with the intelligence, with the intelligence agencies. They cooperate fully. I didn't uncover anything like Bill Gates was a CIA operative. If you've got any information on that, I'd be very curious to hear about it. But he sort of runs in the same circles. Mark Zuckerberg, same deal with Facebook. They have close relationships. I don't think that they're working like directly for. I just think that they're sort of in bed with the intelligence agencies.
Which leads me to Elon Musk then, because I listened to Elon Musk, Alex Jones, the Tate brothers recently. I don't know if you heard it, that broadcast that went out that got over 100 million people listened to it. But Elon is portraying himself as counter to the mainstream. Now, I know Charlie Robinson has been on, and there's two sides to Elon. And we had this one of the guys on last week who hated Elon. Where do you stand with Elon?
I applaud Elon Musk for a lot of things that he's done. I mean, the takeover of Twitter, I think, has thus far been a net positive. Just thinking a few years back before he owned Twitter, it was very easy to get canceled, very easy to get shadow banned. I mean, I think I'm still to a degree shadow banned. I don't know. I don't think that's probably in some penalty box from a holdover from the previous owners. But in any case, overall, I've seen a lot more information flowing over Twitter or X than I did before Elon bought it. So I give him credit for that. At the same time, he has a sort of technocrat streak running through him. I go trace his family back all the way back to his grandfather, his maternal grandfather, who was one of the founders of the Technocracy Inc. movement in Canada. He actually got kicked out of Canada, the grandfather did, for this movement, which was subversive. I mean, it's an inherently, for those who haven't heard like of the term technocracy or don't know what a technocrat is, a technocrat is someone who believes that the masses are really just too stupid to make decisions. And so you must be ruled by a scientific engineering elite. It's an inherently anti-democratic or undemocratic system. They don't want people voting for things. They don't want people to be making the decisions over their own lives. It needs to be the engineers, the scientists, people like Elon Musk. And so Elon, his grandfather, you know, was a founder of that movement. And he has shown many signs to be a technocrat himself. He's, you know, he's got a very cozy relationship. Every single one of his businesses has a very cozy relationship with the government. I'm particularly disturbed by the Neuralink ambitions and the brain-computer interface. It's stuff like that that kind of makes me wary. But for now, I'm cautiously optimistic. Once he starts putting microchips in brains, I guess we'll have to see where that goes.
So what do you think the end game with Neuralink is?
Yeah, the end game with Neuralink, I mean, they're not very shy about it. Right now, I mean, the New York Times actually just did a piece, I think a week or two ago, about a brain-computer interface and how there's been huge strides made. You know, right now, over 10,000 people have had a Neuralink type thing implanted in their brain, and there seems to be progress on this. And so they say, right now, they say that the whole purpose is to cure paralysis, cure traumatic brain injuries, people with, I don't know, like amnesia or suffering from some sort of neurological condition. And who could be against that, right? I mean, that's kind of how they always put these things into effect is come up with something that's totally unassailable. So yeah, I'm all for people who are paralyzed no longer being paralyzed. But the end game is ultimately this sort of transhumanist hellscape where they think they can live forever. I mean, Elon Musk has talked about uploading his brain to the cloud. He said he claims to have done it. I don't know how we could verify that, but he claims he's uploaded his brain to the cloud, and the ultimate. And so that's how a Neuralink would work. You know, you hook your brain up to a computer. The brain can somehow translate or process all of the things in your brain. I'm skeptical that it would ever work, but nonetheless, New York Times, Elon Musk are reporting it is working. So you'll have to dig deeper yourself into that. I got a lot of information into the book. And then ultimately, you'll be able to download your brain. So you upload it, you save it, and then you download it into some sort of an avatar. And so whether you're living in something like what Mark Zuckerberg is working on with the metaverse, where you're kind of, this would be more like the Matrix type situation where you're just kind of sitting in a chair you're living in this fantastic digital world where everything's at the, you know, reach, you know, touch of the fingertips, you download it into some sort of like, you know, Tesla has just unveiled its new robots. And you live in sort of like a surrogate type situation with like the Bruce Willis movie. Nonetheless, these things are like right around the corner. I always thought, as you know, we kind of think about like this dystopian like future, like it's far off or science fiction. We'll know it when we reach it. We're sort of at that point right now.
So if Elon Musk is claiming that he's put his brain into the cloud, does that mean he has technology that can read people's minds?
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
That would seem to be like, you know, the implication there. I mean, I think I don't know that it's like telepathy where you could do it that way, but I think you'd have to probably hook yourself up in some way. I'm not quite sure on the logistics of all this, but that's the kind of things he's funding, which just feels, you know, feels wrong. That's kind of what the book gets into, is a lot of these guys have this God complex where whether it's, you know, making fake meats as Bill Gates is doing, like lab growing like cultured cells and trying to make it bleed like a real hamburger. It's like, there's nothing wrong with a real hamburger. I'm not sure why they need to reinvent meat here. And same thing with the Neuralink and the brain computer interfaces and a lot of the other pharmaceutical stuff they're working on. The end goal ultimately, and that's the thing that sort of unites every person on the planet, even the one thing we may have in common with these control oligarchs, as I call them, is that we're all going to die. Some of us have made peace with that in ways others haven't. And it appears these guys want to, you know, live forever. It's something that wealthy people have wanted for a long time. And now these guys actually have the means to bring it about.
All right. Well, based on your research, Seamus, do you foresee in our lifetime that the government will have access to some kind of technology whereby if they put a chip into your brain, they will know what you're thinking?
But in a way, they don't actually even need it. I mean, they have that right now. And in a way, you don't need a chip in your brain for it. You're offering up what you're thinking every moment of every day, all the time, right now. And previously, they didn't have the means to sift through all of your communications and all of your, I mean, our interview right now, and to process all of that and to ascribe it to a profile and to determine what you're thinking. But I mean, for example, Yuval Noah Harari, the guy at the World Economic Forum, he's Klaus Schwab's sort of visionary. He's talked about this exact thing where Facebook or Twitter can know, you know, he says now, you know, he said he was gay, and he says that Facebook or a lot of these big tech companies would know someone who is gay before that person did. And so to a degree, they sort of have that now, like at real time thinking with a microchip. I'm not sure, but the advances in AI are really giving them the power, whether it's the government or the big tech companies, or since we know they're in bed with each other, both of them, the power to know what you're thinking, to predict your actions. I mean, we're not far away from like pre-crime divisions where, you know, there's a 67% chance you're going to commit a crime, so you're going to get a knock at your door. That type of thing's here right now.
So one of the things Elon Musk said in the conversation with Alex Jones was that the Earth can host a lot more people, but I'm getting the impression that the globalist agenda is to cull the population. Where do you lie on that?
Yeah, well, and you've just touched on like one of the biggest themes of the book here, and I applaud. That's one of the things I applaud Elon Musk for, because I kind of trace it all back. Like before there was climate change, before there was global warming, before there was global cooling, and before holes in the ozone layer, and all of these cataclysmic crises that we need to surrender all of our autonomy and our money to solve to the control oligarchs, there was overpopulation. And so I start with the Rockefeller family and how they've been funding various overpopulation solutions, whether it was Planned Parenthood. Before that, it was the Birth Control League. The Rockefeller Foundation has funded every type of contraceptive, from IUDs to birth control pills to even an abortifacient, which can kill a baby up to 10 weeks, called RU486 or mifepristone, which in the United States is really a controversial method, but it also happens to be the most popular method. They were funding all of that long before they figured out that, you know, calling it women's rights was a much better marketing proposition than saying, you know, everybody's overpopulated, so you got to kill your offspring. But they've been working on it for 70 plus years, convincing people that to kill your offspring. And you see it now all the time, everywhere. People don't want to have kids. They've been told that, you know, I ask any of your peers, they do, like, you know, my peers, like, are you going to have kids? No, I want to save the planet. So I don't think there needs to be any more humans on the planet. That took a long time to convince people of that. And right now, birth rates are at historic lows. The problem is there's no actual evidence that the planet is overpopulated. So I do applaud Elon Musk. Jeff Bezos is another guy who's said the same thing. The overpopulation thing is a myth. Like there, I mean, if you've ever flown by plane over most places in the world, I mean, yeah, there's some deserts and a lot of water, but there is a ton of green space. In fact, if every human lived as densely as people in Manhattan, New York City lived, we could fit the entire human race easily on, you know, the continent of Australia or on even New Zealand. And that would leave the entire planet empty. So overpopulation is a myth. It's brought in, and they usually say that it's going to lead to resource exhaustion and we're going to run out of resources. There's no evidence of that. In fact, every time that there's a resource that seems to be running low, the price ends up skyrocketing and then a new resource is found to replace it. And in fact, every resource is, I mean, aside from inflation, has been getting on a much, like, you know, cheaper and cheaper and cheaper, which indicates there's more resources than ever. And so these overpopulation people, they always fail to take into account the most important resource, which is human ingenuity and adaptation.
So as a precursor to culling the population, would they first put us into a Hunger Games society structure?
Maybe. I mean, I think they've done a pretty good job of getting us to cull the population ourselves. I mean, that's, I don't allege any sort of like genocidal, conspiracy. They've done a pretty good job over the last 50 years of convincing people to stop having children and bring the birth rates lower. Now, I mean, Bill Gates still talks about the planet being overpopulated. I think, you know, they ought to take a victory lap. People used to have three, four, five kids. Now most people have one, maybe two. So that's sort of how they're doing it. I mean, if they're going to get extreme about it, they would probably put in place a policy like they had in China, a one-child policy. Ted Turner has called for a global one-child policy for 100 years. He's the billionaire founder of CNN and Turner Broadcast Systems and all, you know, a bunch of other media companies. There's others, Jane Goodall, the famous gorilla, I guess, person. She thinks that 500 million is the right population for planet Earth. They don't really tell us how they want to get there, but it seems to be some combination of, abortion and pharmaceuticals or something.
So I have a friend who works on underground multi-million pound homes that are built way, way, way under London for people who think that Armageddon is coming. Are you aware of any of these control oligarchs investing in any such properties?
Yeah, I flew to Hawaii, to Kauai, one of the most beautiful islands in Hawaii. And Mark Zuckerberg is building a compound there, and he's well underway of building a deep underground base of sorts that looks like it can accommodate quite a few people. So I guess he can bring all of his friends. I'm not sure, you know, what he thinks it's, you know, what that's for. I mean, you know, Hawaii is pretty far out in the middle of the ocean, and if it were to get nuked or something, like, I don't think his base would survive. But no, a lot of elites. So Mark Zuckerberg is the most prominent one, who's building some sort of doomsday bunker on the island of Kauai. There's some people with drones have gone out and captured the state of that construction. It looks like some very thick concrete. I'm sure it will be amazingly tech savvy and futuristic. I talk about in chapter 9, the dystopian present. It really opens with Zuckerberg talking about his vision for the future, which is pretty dystopian, and it's a lot of metaverse stuff. So anyway, he gives a tour of the metaverse, and it looks like it starts in his Hawaii home, and then it kind of quickly turns into like a digital space station or something. But in any case, he's building one. Bill Gates's home in Seattle is very high tech. It's 66,000 square feet. I think he's got like 24 bathrooms, and he's got a handful of other properties. There's a basement. I don't know about a bunker, but it would not shock me if the world's richest man had a nice bunker somewhere. He's got several jets, seaplane, helicopters, etc. So Bezos, I don't know about Bezos's bunker, but we've all seen how big his yacht is. And if his yacht is any indication, he's probably got a nice big bunker too.
We've only got a minute or so left for this last question then. So you focused on these modern high-tech billionaires. What about the bloodlines of Europe, including the royal family? How do they fit into this?
Well, maybe that, you know, that might be an interesting next book. I mean, I did find a genealogist who had traced Bill Gates' ancestry back, and apparently he was some courtier, or, you know, apparently I think like six greats or something, grandfather, maybe even more going back, was sort of close to royalty. I don't know, you know, not quite royal, but some important sheriff of some kind. But no, I've not looked into the bloodlines of the European elite. That sounds like a very interesting book, though. I will say that I've got a good chunk on Jeffrey Epstein in the book. And something that not enough people are talking about is that Jeffrey Epstein's bank, JP Morgan Chase, effectively has the client list. I mean, they admitted they recently paid a combined $365 million settlement, JP Morgan did, to the victims of Jeffrey Epstein. And in that trial that just took place over the last year, they allegedly admitted to facilitating $1 billion in, quote, human trafficking, end quote, transfers. So a lot of people want to know who Jeffrey Epstein's clients were. Everybody wonders, why hasn't this list been released? They need to be asking JP Morgan Chase where that list is, what those names are.
I agree. And we'd love to get you back to talk about this some more. We got in trouble for talking about that case a few years ago. We have to do it on Locals. But if you would come back, that would be great. Absolutely fascinating, Seamus. Thanks for spending this time with us. Really love speaking to you. Before you go, can you just let the viewers know where they can find you and support you?
Oh, yeah. Sean, thanks so much. I really enjoyed this. Thanks for having me on. I am at Seamus Bruner on all platforms, X, Facebook, whatever, Telegram, whatever you use, I'm there. That's SEAMUSBRUNER, all platforms. And the book, you can get it. It's on Spotify if you like audiobooks. Otherwise, it's on a lot of other retailers that you could purchase from. And you can find those at controloligarchsbook.com.
We salute what you're doing. Keep up the great work and hope to see you soon. Cheers, Seamus.
Thank you, Sean. Have a good day.
Enjoy Florida.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18+. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.